Welcome back to Thursday's Topical Currents. Of course, we have food and dining coming up. It's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Well, Joe, Valentine's Day is coming around the bend.
Sunday, I believe.
Yes. You believe correctly. Yeah. Now, have you gotten your loved one flowers?
I've gotten more than a loved one. I've got a couple of loved ones.
Yes. Did you get it through WLRN?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, good. Because we want to tell you that
the only way to go.
That's right. We have, as you've been hearing for the last couple of days, we are, or last few days, you can support WLRN, send flowers to your loved one, either $100, $150, or $220. But the amazing thing is you get entered into this drawing to get two tickets to see Andrea Bocelli, dinner at the Hard Rock Dinner Club, and a champagne toast. That drawing, though, is being done at 7 this evening.
Oh.
So when you get your flowers through WLRN and do it soon, you'll get entered into the drawing to win those two tickets.
And the number to call, 1-866-247-9576. 866-247-WLRN. Also, it's easy at WLRN.org. Just follow the links there.
Right. So we hope you will support WLRN and get your flower arrangements through us. But if you're planning to share a homemade romantic dinner with a loved one that night, you may want to listen in now. That's if you'd attempt cooking an authentic meal of Mexican cuisine. Linda Gassenheimer is here, of course. We have yet another celebrity chef and restaurant baron. Welcome, Linda.
Well, great to be with you. And of course, bring out the hearts and the flowers this time of year. So I want to know, you know, what kinds of foods do you dream about for Valentine's Day? Oysters, prime rib, maybe chocolate.
Chocolate?
Yeah, I knew chocolate for you would be. I knew prime rib for Joe. Okay. Well, here's a new idea. How about some hot and spicy Mexican foods? Our guest is celebrity chef and restaurateur Rick Bayless, and he's known for his extraordinary restaurants and his PBS series, Mexico, One Plate at a Time. Let's welcome Rick Bayless. Hello, Rick.
Hello.
Great to have you with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, that's great. I'm really anxious to find out what we're going to be eating, Mexican style. But also, we'd love to hear from our listeners. What's your favorite Mexican food? Or do you have some questions for Rick Bayless? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
Or email is radio@WLRN.org.
And of course, with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner Minutes columns, and you can read Fred's wine column in Saturday's Miami Herald. Fred, do I need to even ask you what we're drinking today?
Well, the question is, what wine goes with spicy Mexican Valentine's Day food? We'll try to find out.
All right. Okay. Well, anxious to hear about that.
We'll see what he has up his sleeve.
Uh-huh. Okay, Rick Bayless, first of all, congratulations. You've got many restaurant successes. You brought authentic Mexican food to Chicago's Frontera Grill, and now I understand you have several other restaurants there?
We have actually three restaurants in a row on Clark Street in downtown Chicago. The first we opened up, it's almost embarrassing to say this, almost 30 years ago, Frontera Grill opened in 1987, and then a couple of years later, we opened Topolobampo. I had been living in Mexico for a long time and was really taken with the refinement of the cuisine. Now, I know when you say that to most Americans, they go, no, there's no refinement to Mexican food. But well, it's only because of the Mexican-American food that we've been weaned on here, which is just the tiniest little tip of the iceberg that is great.
Well, Rick, yes. You know, that's what I was going to ask you, because when most of us think of Mexican food, it's burritos, tacos. Is that really Mexican or not?
Well, okay, so when people talk about burritos, nachos, fajitas, most of that stuff isn't even known in Mexico at all. That was invented in the U.S. If it was in Mexico, it was a few feet into Mexico, right at the border. But there are places that serve tacos, of course, in Mexico, there are taquerias, but it's not nearly as a big part of the cuisine as most people in the United States would think about it. When you go to your sort of favorite Mexican chain place and you order the Acapulco platter or whatever, you know you won't find that anywhere in Mexico. And in fact, most of the Mexican-American food, as delicious as it can be, is really based on sort of subsistence kind of cooking. I mean, it's not certainly what you would find in the central part of Mexico, where was the seat of the government, well, of the Aztec Empire before
right.
the Spaniards arrived. There were court cuisines. There was a lot of incredible refinement, and still is to this very day.
Well, what I wanted to ask you, Rick, we keep talking about Mexican food. What are some of the traditional Mexican flavors?
Okay.
Educate us.
Sure. Okay, so if you're going to have a big party, you're probably going to go one of two different directions with the food. If it's a casual party, then you're going to make a huge pot of pozole. So pozole is a pork and hominy stew, if you will, that has all these fresh garnishes like shredded cabbage added to it at the very end. So if you've ever had, it's kind of funny that Mexico's our next door neighbor, but my allusions will be to Asian things. But if you've ever had like a great big bowl of pho from a Vietnamese restaurant that's long simmered stuff with a whole lot of fresh vegetables and herbs added to it, that's what pozole is really like.
So pozole it's got hominy and it's got pork, but what are the special spices? I mean, what makes it so Mexican?
There are three different versions of it. One of them is done with a very simple broth, no flavors other than perhaps some onion and garlic added to it, and then part of the toppings would be crushed chili. The second version, which is my favorite, is the one that's made with dried red chilies, usually guajillo chilies that look a little bit like New Mexico chilies or ancho chilies, and those are cooked with it the whole time, and that makes this deep resonant flavor and this deep rich red color.
Well, you're talking about chilies and all, and so the ancho chilies, what are the chilies that you use specifically for your Mexican foods? Because there's so many different chilies here.
Well, if you walked into our storeroom right now, you would count about 35.
Oh, all right.
So
we
do
don't
you
need
want
to have
me to enumerate all of those?
No, never mind.
And they're not used. Mostly people that don't know much about chilies think of chilies as adding spice to a dish. But in Mexican cuisine, they're first and foremost thought of in terms of their flavors. Are they chocolatey? Are they bright and sort of cranberry-like? And there's everything in between. Are they smoky? Are they high in acid? There's all these different flavors. And so, the way they're treated in the Mexican kitchen integrates the heat. It's not like adding a blast of spice to a dish. In fact, that's considered really bad cooking in Mexico.
What about chocolate in Mexican cuisine?
Well, you know, Mexico is thought of as the origin of chocolate. And it was very, very highly prized during the Mayan time, about 700 and 800 AD. And then that sort of carried over into the Aztecs, 1300 to 1500. And it was so important that they actually used cacao beans, the chocolate bean, as a form of currency. And it was so highly prized that if you were to make it into a beverage, it was a little bit like drinking gold. It was only served to the upper crust.
Well, and I understand, Rick, that at that time it wasn't sweet. It wasn't a sweet
Well, there was
flavor.
No sweetening agents,
right,
really in Mexico except from the agave, and a type of agave nectar and honey. But there's really no record in those ancient texts of making chocolate sweet. So if you think about black coffee, you're pretty close to where
it
is.
Was. Well, now, you sent me a recipe, and it's up on the website, talking about chocolate,
yeah,
for a Mexican hot chocolate with
right,
with churros. So it was such a simple recipe, and it looked so delicious. So tell us about it.
Okay, so Mexican hot chocolate is made from a special kind of chocolate. When chocolate was taken to Europe and then sugar was added, it became a kind of bonbon pretty quickly, and they wanted it to melt on your tongue. Once you get it to that place, it can have nuances of flavor, but it loses a whole lot of the fresh flavors, because to get it really to melt like that right on your tongue, it requires a whole long period of grinding. So in Mexico, they don't grind their chocolate very much at all, and that preserves a whole lot of the fresh flavors. Then that is diluted in either milk or water. And if you go to a place like Oaxaca in southern Mexico, that's sort of a chocolate capital, if you will, there's a whole street of mills that do nothing but chocolate. It smells so amazing when you walk down the street.
So
people take that chocolate home, and then they make their hot chocolate out of it. But most of them make it with water, not with milk.
Water. Well, I noticed in your recipe that you froth it up, so it looked really delicious with churros. I don't know that we can buy churros. I mean, you gave us the recipe, but if maybe it would taste good with some donuts. It'd be a nice Valentine treat.
Well, it would be good with anything. It says certainly when you go in Mexico, when you have chocolate, that's what everybody thinks of as churros, which are fried dough, just like a donut is. But they're extruded. It's made from a very simple batter, but it's extruded out of, people say you could use a pastry bag to do it, but I've never been very successful with that part of it. Usually it's done with something that's analogous to a cookie gun, but on a much bigger scale.
They sell them on the streets here in Miami.
Yeah, churros are very popular everywhere. They originally come from Spain, and so every place the Spaniards went, they took the notion of churros with them.
Right, so that would be wonderful to have your churros and dip it into that chocolate. That would be a nice Valentine's treat as far as I'm concerned.
Of course.
And I understand that you're a major party giver.
I love to give parties.
Yeah, so if you're going to give a Valentine's party, what would you be serving?
Well, you know, a Valentine's party is a hard one because usually I think of something extremely intimate. So that would maybe, for me, just be a party of two. I might invite my daughter and her fiance over, but to tell you the truth, I think they'd rather be by themselves. So I'm going to say my party is probably just going to be a party of two. And for me, what I think of as Valentine's stuff is going to all be about wonderful bites of luxury. Okay, whatever that means to anyone, that may be in my cuisine, that may be a little bit of mole, the really classic dish. As I was going to say before, if you're going to have a party in Mexico and it's a big group of people, you'll think about pozole, the pork and hominy soup. But the other thing that is very classic is to make some mole. And I just came out with a book, my ninth cookbook of all things, that is called More Mexican Every Day. And I have the simplest mole that you could make. They're always complex because it's all about complexity.
Well,
to make mole,
and mole takes, excuse me, lots and lots of different ingredients in it, so
well, what
it
I've
takes
done
a while.
Is to, what I have done is to actually pare it back to what are the absolute essential ones and what are the essential steps. So I can actually produce this really delicious mole in about an hour. So that's what I would serve. And if I had access to a grill, I'd probably grill some quail, something that I don't do very often, and serve that mole on that quail. And because the bites of luxury would usually include something chocolatey at the end, I would think about some kind of a chocolate dessert. And I like warm chocolate desserts. I like things like a beautiful, just a single layer cake, a chocolate cake, like a devil's food cake, no icing on it at all.
Rick, you're getting right to my part of the meal. Wonderful chocolate cake. But we're going to have to take a little break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with celebrity chef Rick Bayless. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with celebrity chef Rick Bayless. He's the owner of Frontera Grill and several other restaurants, and he's a TV star on the PBS show Mexico, One Plate at a Time. And he's been giving us some tips on Valentine's food and Mexican food in general. And he's going to be here at the South Beach Food and Wine Festival on Sunday, February 28th. There's going to be a dinner at the Lowe's Beach Hotel. And that's going to be really, really interesting. More information, it's at Google South Beach Wine and Food Festival. But right now, it's dinner in minutes time. So I'm going to give you my recipe for a Valentine's dinner, simple and easy. It's grilled lobster tail with black beans and rice salad.
Wow.
So Florida red lobsters are in season, and this is a real simple dinner. You split the hard side of the lobster tail with a sharp knife, and then you can butterfly it, open it, and then you slit open the meat. So you've got a nice flat lobster tail. And then I put some sherry and some crushed garlic and butter on it and just put it on the grill for a few minutes. Mm. So simple. You could even put it under your broiler. If you do under a broiler, then cover it with foil. 10 minutes and it's done. And while the lobster cooks, you can boil up some rice. And then you can add to that an oil and vinegar dressing and some onion and little garlic cloves. And then I mix with it some canned, rinsed and drained canned black beans. Now, I use canned because this is dinner in minutes. So
15 minutes.
15-minute dinner. That complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking for Valentine's Day?
Well, you know, Linda, I'm sure you take me for granted and assume I will insist on champagne for Valentine's Day. But in truth, one of my favorite Valentine meals was accompanied by Diet Coke.
Come on, Fred. I do not believe you.
Now, we had reservations at a fancy French restaurant, but when we got there, they were overbooked and couldn't seat us. And every other fancy restaurant was booked, so we ended up having a very pleasant dinner slash breakfast at a local Denny's. And I can tell you that Diet Coke goes very well with the Grand Slam breakfast of eggs, pancake, and bacon, especially at 1 a.m. on Valentine's Day.
All right, so I'm waiting for the real drink here.
Well, in truth, your stereotype of me is spot on accurate. Champagne or sparkling wine is the perfect quaff for almost any Valentine's Day meal. You can find a bubbly for anything on the menu. First, your grilled lobster would go very nicely with a sparkling wine in the category called Blanc de Blanc, which means it's made entirely with white Chardonnay grapes. Or if you have dishes with chicken, pork, veal, ham, that sort of thing, it would go nicely with a Brut bubbly, which is made of both red and white grapes. And even a big ribeye steak can go with a Blanc de Noir bubbly made entirely of red grapes, or even a powerful rosé bubbly that actually has some red wine in it. Now, Gloria Ferrer, who's a Spanish winemaker in California, makes nice wines in all of these categories in the $25 range. And for Rick's spicy dishes, you want a bubbly with a tad of sweetness. And Veuve Clicquot, the champagne people, makes a champagne called demi-sec, which technically means half dry, but in fact means half sweet. So go figure that. And then finally, I recommend you go home for a nightcap of dark chocolate with glasses of Bonfils Italian dessert wine called Rosa Regale. This is a sweet red wine that smells like roses and has a nice little champagne-like fizz, and it's very romantic, so good
honey.
That's
a fabulous wine. I love that one. That's really good. It's great with sweet things. So, Rick Bayless, what do you think about champagne with your Mexican food?
I think it's fine. A lot of people do want to have something that's effervescent to go with it. I think we're all sort of, we grow up in the United States thinking about something bubbly like a beer to go with Mexican food. When you get into something that's more like a mole, like I was talking about, a sparkling wine would be fine with it, but it really, really, really resonates beautifully with like a Grenache from Southern Rhone. It's deep, rich flavors in the wine, and the slight earthiness go really well with the dark red chilies that are used to thicken that mole. And when you get into the complex side of Mexican food, it tends to skew more toward red wine than white wine. It's certainly because the cuisine is sort of earthy and complex, sweetness would tend to be kind of out of place with that. The sweetness will really stand out separate from that. If you're looking for something that is, you know, a lot of times when you eat Asian food and it's got this blasting heat in it, that's not part of Mexican food. So a lot of people want that sweet to kind of calm it down, but you rarely find that in Mexican food. So usually I think of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc would be kind of a go-to for me with all of its fruitiness for a white, and then sort of the Southern Rhone reds. For if I was to sort of say one place in the earth that I would turn to look for wine that would go with a greater number of dishes, in my cuisine.
Wow.
Rick, do you ever use any Mexican wines?
Tons. We have a huge Mexican section on our list. It's very, very sparely available in the United States. Not very many people have it, but, you know, there's a major wine-growing region in Mexico. There's just so much demand for the wines there that they're not motivated to sell them outside of Mexico. They can sell them all in Mexico. But the Valle de Guadalupe in the northern part of Baja California is just an amazing wine-growing region. People were surprised to learn that there's over 125 wineries just in that one valley.
Right. So, fantastic. Rick, we only have about a minute left, and I just wanted to ask, we mentioned briefly that you're going to be at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival.
Yes.
And just shortly, can you tell us what you'll be serving there?
Well, I'm going to be doing a demo, and I'm actually going to teach people how to make a fresh cheese, and then this really, really delicious vegetable mix that you find as a simple entree, but it's a great taco filling. So that's my demo, and then I'm doing a book signing after that. And then at that Los Hotel, I'm doing a full dinner, and it's going to be... I'm not replicating Like Water for Chocolate, the movie, though that will be screened that night, but I'm doing my own inspirations from that movie, and it'll be very luxurious bites.
Well, it
sounds
wonderful.
Really nice.
That sounds terrific. Mm. Well, it's been a really tasty week. Thank you so much, Rick Bayless, for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Great. And that recipe for the chocolate is at dinnerinminutes.com. Fred Tasker, thanks for your great advice.
Always a pleasure.
And happy Valentine's Day to you.
Same to you.
And I hope the snow goes okay there in Michigan.
Oh, we're loving it. Pretty.
It's 9 degrees there.
Lucky Fred.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, great talking with you.
You'd be my Valentine, Linda.
With pleasure. Next week, we're going to be having a hamburger competition between Pincho Factory's Nadal Ahmed and the Federal's Cesar Zapata. That'll be really interesting. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.